welcome to our brand new podcast from Pinellas County Schools. This is Tales from the Tech Side. I am your host, James Wilson. In this podcast, we will be looking at how technology is impacting education, the good, the bad, the indifferent, all sorts of different topics, areas, but all dealing with education. Today, I have two guests with me, and we're going to talk about the evolution of technology's impact in education. But first, you're wondering, who am I? I am a Pinellas County School employee. I'm a former high school math teacher. I taught several years in the math classroom, left there, became a middle school math coach. I currently serve as an instructional technology coach, where I go out and visit several schools helping their teachers integrate technology into the classroom. And I also manage the district's LMS, or learning management system, which we use Canvas here in Pinellas County Schools. My two guests are Dr. Constance Colosi, also known as Connie, and Sarah Trulson, program. And so I'll let them introduce themselves. We'll start off with Dr. Colosi.
Hi, this is exciting. Just the evolution of your podcast and the broadcast from our digital learning department has changed a lot. We can get into that. So I'm Connie Colosi. I'm the director of media, text, and digital learning, which means I'm in charge of media centers, instructional materials, and digital learning. And I've been in this job about 7 years. And today is an auspicious occasion because it is my last day before retirement after 29 years in Pinellas County Schools.
Yay. It's been a pleasure working with you, Connie.
Same.
And so now our next guest, Sarah Trulson.
Hi, I'm Sarah Trulson. I'm the program coordinator of digital learning. So I get to work with James and the other members of our team. We have five fabulous instructional technology coordinators, coaches who work with schools. I have the distinct pleasure of getting to work with teachers and students in using all of the fun technology tools that we bring to the district. And I get to help decide what types of tools we're going to add to the classrooms and introduce.
All right, great. And so again, our topic for today is the evolution of technology into the educational sphere. As you can hear, Dr. Colosi has 29 years of experience. Sarah has...
Oh, goodness. Over 20 years of experience. I think I'm on like year 21, maybe. Long time.
And I have right at about 16. So between us all, we've seen a lot of change, a lot of growth. Again, not all good, but we've seen growth in the use of technology in the classroom. And so, Dr. Colosi, you have been a classroom teacher, an assistant principal, a principal, the reading specialist for the district, as well as now the director of media techs and instructional materials. So if you can reflect back when you first started teaching, what was it like? What was the technology that was available and how was it being utilized?
Well, I had, I scrounged around, I think, in a storeroom, and I found some little tiny Macintosh computers, and someone else here would know which ones they were, and they ran off of floppy disks, and I was like the height of trying to be cool when I worked out a way to get those talking to each other and networked. So there's that, and then slowly different applications started to come in, and I recall as I was assistant principal at Azalea Middle School, we spent a lot of money and we went in on a program and bought a program called River Deep, and that was kind of my initiation into instructional software, and had a chance to really learn a lot about the pitfalls as well as the advantages.
Okay. Sarah, you were a primary teacher, right?
I was. I taught first grade and second grade.
Now, a lot of people don't think that the littles, as we refer to our primary kids, can use technology. Can you share a little bit about how you incorporated technology into your classroom with our youngest of students?
I can. And I'll tell you, James, I have been in this office with a few different titles, but the same basic kinds of jobs and tasks since 2007, so 2008. So when I was using technology in the classroom, it looked a lot different than it does now. What I can tell you is because I knew I wanted my students to be using the computers, I was at Ponce de Leon Elementary, and at the time we did not have one-to-one devices. We had carts that we could share. Usually one grade level had a cart of, I think, like 18 MacBooks. So they were Macintosh as well. But this is how long ago it was. Our schools didn't have wireless access. So if you could not hook that computer up to an Ethernet port and hardwire it, it wasn't going online. So what I did, and it's no longer allowed because we don't need to, but what I did is I actually went out, talked to our tech coordinator at the school, and I said, I need wireless in my room. If I buy the hub, will you help me to hook it up so I don't break anything? And I actually had my own wireless hub in my classroom so that my littles could be scattered around the room with their Macs. And they actually were creating, it wasn't PowerPoint, it was an AppleWorks program, but something like that. They were using programs like what River Deep had for math with these little bouncy robots. They were using that for enrichment and practice in mathematics. They were using AppleWorks PowerPoint and Word equivalent to create little presentations, to type their spelling words or their word wall words. So, you know, my littles could even troubleshoot when our Wi-Fi connection was funny. They knew how to connect to Miss Trolson's network. So first graders, second graders, very capable of doing all kinds of really cool things with technology. And our team, especially two of our coordinators, Laura Clark and Stacey Peller and Vanderloop, work a lot with our littlest learners, even our little pre-K learners, to use the tools we have now to do all kinds of things, creating videos, creating books with Book Creator. Yeah, the sky's the limit with our little kids.
Yeah. Now, when I came into the district, fortunately, we had advanced to where I didn't have to use a Mac, but we did not have classroom computers. We, again, were not a one-to-one district, but I could check out a cart, and there was wireless in place. But right around my start was when the smart boards were coming into play, and I thought that was just amazing that I could build these lessons and then have students come up to the board and actually use their fingers, drag and draw, interact with the technology so that instead of them getting the teaching or the learning done to them, they can come in and participate by coming up and interacting with the smart lessons that I created, putting them online after the class so that they could then still continue their education, go back and review. And so different starts for each of us, but the technology has been around for quite a while and has been seeping its way into education or ever so slowly. And then the pandemic hit.
That changed lots.
Yeah. And so a lot of not just Pinellas County Schools, but a lot of districts, a lot of educators had to then be forced with the fact that, hey, how am I going to continue to educate students in this now new day and time where all my kids or part of my kids are no longer sitting in the classroom? So can you guys share some of your experience and your thoughts about that push that the pandemic had as far as getting technology more pervasive into education?
Yeah, so I want to back up just a little, because when I first came into this position into about 7 years ago, we would make our resources known to students and teachers by publishing a list, and it would be a list of URLs, and everyone would have to remember what password they needed for what platform, and invariably somebody'd forget their password, and it was really chaotic. And honestly, I had had a real user's perspective about technology. I didn't really care. And honestly, even now, I want to push the button and I want it to work. And other people can figure out why it works or in Sarah's case, why it doesn't work. So one of the first visions I had that I brought in and was to push the district toward a single sign-on. And that happened with our Clever integration. And so when, fast forward now to pandemic time, whatever else we needed to do, we already had really successfully gotten the message out, hey, go to Clever. Go to Clever, that's where you'll find your stuff. And so I really feel like that initial Clever implementation with a single sign-on was the thing that got us through the pandemic. And so that was a place. And then from there, we had been working for a long time with Microsoft. We had folks in our department that were real familiar with Microsoft Teams. And in general, our department spent a lot of time kind of waving our hands saying, hey, you guys, over here, we could help you. We could show you a really cool thing over here. And, you know, we got some customers. But when the pandemic came, all of a sudden, it was like, oh, yeah, what was that thing again? And it really put us in a fast forward mode between here's an opportunity to do something cool to here's my lifeline to get this done.
Yeah. I was reading an article where I think it says on average within a school year, teachers will access like 100 different educational apps. So there's lots of resources out there. Sarah, what do you think about how the pandemic has pushed forward technology into education?
I think that one of the other big things that kind of came about with that is the way we communicate with each other. So I think it's still happening to a certain extent in the classroom, but I think we've also had a little bit of a, you know, now that we're not fully engulfed in pandemic style teaching, we'll say, I think that some of it has gone a little bit more towards the way teachers seek out training and information themselves as well. So we're still sticking with a lot of things like Microsoft Teams and the way we communicate with each other. And now teachers want to go to trainings in things like Teams or Zoom or those types of things as well. But I think also they've started to look at other ways that students can show and express their learning. And they're using things more like Book Creator and Flip, used to be Flipgrid, but now Flip, to have students kind of demonstrate what they know in different ways that maybe they didn't do as much before that, because during the pandemic, they were kind of forced to get creative in finding ways for their students to express themselves and share that knowledge. And now they're using those still or bringing them back if they took a break. And use it in the classroom so kids can get a little more creative in demonstrating their knowledge.
Now, you mentioned something that I want to just go back and touch on. You talked about teacher training.
Yes.
And so teachers have been and will continue to always, you know, seek to enhance their abilities and their skills. And one of the things that we do as a digital learning department is provide technology training, but you mentioned how the pandemic changed that sort of way that we provide the professional development for
yes.
teachers. Before, because I used to do it, it was my summer job. Is I never taught summer school, but I would go to trainings and receive stipends, and but you had to physically get up and go and attend. So that was my summer job. That's how I earned extra money, is by getting trained during the summer. And we know that when the pandemic hit, right, well, we couldn't be together mm-hmm. anymore because of the risk of being contaminated and contaminating others. And so we started virtually training teachers, right? But now that we're sort of out of this pandemic mode where we can gather together, how is training? Are teachers now more likely to come and sit for a training, or have they gotten accustomed to, I can do this from my pajamas in my house, so I'd rather do that?
Yeah, I think the latter, not necessarily in their pajamas, but you never know. Yeah, I think that one of the big changes, and I think it's even came from the standpoint of when we would sit and think about a new tool that we had and we needed to introduce, I think a lot of us on the professional development side would kind of think, well, what location can I find? What's my capacity? All right, I can only fit 30 people in there. And, you know, I want to make sure the Wi-Fi is going to be solid for 30. If I had 75, we might get glitches. So we kind of boxed ourselves in to specific locations or physical spaces and limited numbers and that. And I think when we made that shift, it kind of opened our eyes that although it does look different and we have to have as teachers of adults, just like teachers of kids, we have to have accountability pieces to make sure that the folks who are participating are accountable for being there. Once we figured out we could do that, and it could still be a really quality training and a good experience, I think the participants started wanting to do that too and be involved in that. And it's so much easier for a teacher who is taught all day to kind of get home, sit down, do that training, and then you're home and you're done, you know, when it's over. And I think that's appealing to people. So, yeah, I do think that we seem to still be getting a lot more participation and signups when we do things virtually versus face-to-face. That's probably going to change, and I do see a lot of reasons why face-to-face training is extremely valuable as well. But I think people kind of like the idea of being able to just kind of log on their computer and... And I think trainers, it's kind of nice because we could have 60 or 70 people because they're spread out and they can talk to all kinds of different folks that maybe wouldn't have been able to attend a training in North County because they live in St. Pete or they live mid-county and it's hard to get all the way up to Tarpon Springs, you know, for that physical location. So.
Okay. Now, Dr. Colosi, Sarah mentioned something else that I want to touch on. She mentioned accountability. Mm-hmm. And so there's accountability for us as teacher trainers in making sure that our participants are engaged in doing what they need to. A lot of the stuff that we're hearing about technology as far as pushback has a lot to do with that accountability piece. We've worked together in multiple roles, multiple times, over a number of years. One of the big things that we talk about is classroom management. Can you share some of the things that when it comes to a teacher implementing technology, even semi-effectively, those classroom management pieces that should be prevalent that we should be seeing in those classrooms?
Well, you know, the same concepts that you used without technology have to be used with technology. And you can have a really great teacher who's had to work through what those things are in a face-to-face setting, who might just like hop in on the technology and not really lay out those foundational pieces. So really the first thing is for, we need to have a lesson in how we do this. How do we treat the equipment? How do we, you know, just like the foundations, lay down the expectations just the way you would in a classroom. And then in terms of, and even then staying on task. And so we hear a lot, you know, kids flip over to another website. But if the class is structured in such a way, and I've watched you all do this with the teacher training, and I'm always blown away with your professionalism, with the way online, yes, they could turn it off, turn off the lights and the sound and the camera and be off doing something totally different, but your training is designed in such a way that they have to stay engaged and they have to respond and they are held accountable for a product. And two, having come from a middle school background and you having been there with me, we really think about keeping those kids locked down. That's our number one thought, is how do we keep them quiet and in their seats? And what we know is that when they get more active and they're able to collaborate and they're able to get hands-on and they're able to create things, they're much more likely to engage in the learning that we've put for them. So really those same concepts, you have to think about it a bit, but everything you would do to make a non-tech classroom successful, you're going to do with a tech, but then you have the advantage of some really engaging, cool stuff that you can do.
You're right. there are those just basic underlying classroom, what we call classroom management techniques that are need to be in place whether or not there are devices being used in the classroom at that time. I agree that one of the things that is routines and expectations, and so we teach routines and expectations. So for those educators that are listening, teach those expectations, practice those routines, and that will help with some of the classroom management things that are going on. And so now I want to sort of talk about the future, right? Where we're going, all those great things that are possible, all the things that we're seeing that's coming about. Like I mentioned a little earlier, there are hundreds of thousands of educational apps that are being utilized by teachers, not only here in this district, but across the globe. What are some of those products that you're seeing that has the potential to really shape how education is progressing forward?
I think the first thing I would like to point out is that we kind of need, there's thousands of things we can do, but we need to first decide what's our purpose? Why are we using this application? What are we trying to get done? And then from there, which application is going to help us? And you might have a couple of choices and you can just pick one over the other, but what we've tried to do in the district is first of all, provide teachers with what they need. We've been able to buy some really cool things because of our technology referendum. But then let's get focused. Let's use a couple of platforms that what we talk about is our evergreen apps. And so we don't have to spend time learning a new app every day. We've learned how to use this app, and now we can use this app to do our learning tasks that we have in front of us.
Yeah, and I would agree with Connie as well with that piece. And I think the types of applications, and many of which we already have, that are going to explode or really make a difference and reshape education are not necessarily the ones where I can practice my math facts or I can practice or get an intervention for reading skills or something like that, because we have a lot of those there. I think the ones that are going to make the biggest impact are the ones that allow for creation. Those applications that are not tied to a specific subject matter per se. They're ones like Book Creator. They're ones like Flipgrid, whatever it is, that allow for students to demonstrate their learning across multiple subject areas, and really in a creative and innovative way. I think those types of applications are going to be the ones that really start to reshape what we're doing and how we're working with students. Because I don't necessarily think it's this particular app that's going to kind of teach me math facts or teach me reading skills, that kind of stuff, are the ones that are going to revolutionize things as much as the ones that are allowing that classroom teacher to provide options for students to demonstrate their understanding of what they're doing in their classroom, their understanding of the standards, which is what we're tasked with as teachers, as a school district, is having our students grasp and understand and demonstrate their knowledge of those. So those applications that we have now, as they continue to refine themselves, and then applications that we're not aware of yet, that Ms. Smith finds and puts through our IT governance process so that we get to take a look at it and make sure that it's safe for our students and complies with all of the state and federal guidelines and district guidelines for kids to use it, that those applications we haven't seen yet that are going to allow for a different type of creation that we don't have an application for now. We don't have in our evergreen portfolio of applications. Those are going to be the ones I think that really shine and make the biggest kinds of impacts on what our kids are doing in the day-to-day regular classroom.
So I have a question. Looking at society as a whole, and what's going on as far as lots of jobs are being replaced by robotic workers or artificial intelligence. Do you feel that at some point there will be no need for an actual teacher in the classroom where we just sit the kids on a device and then they just learn and go?
No.
Never.
Never, because really when you're working with young people, they really have to know the why. And the reason most kids don't understand the why, if you say, well, because you need to learn it for the test. That's not a why. The why is, I like Mr. Wilson. He's cool. He's sharing this with me. I want to please him. I want to reward him. And that's because Mr. Wilson's put in a whole bunch of work to make that happen. Mm-hmm. and went over those kids that didn't come in thinking that. You're never going to take out that human connection from the learning process.
Yeah, and I agree. One of the roles that I had when I originally left the classroom is that I was the district distance learning coordinator. And so one of my first roles was working with the district and work a wonderful group of teachers and some great leadership to develop our own Pinellas Virtual School. And that was the huge question of the day was, you're building this virtual school. Are you creating this machine that's going to replace teachers? Where we're not going to need, you know, 8, 9, 10 teachers, where, you know, you just one and then automatically the robot's going to do everything. And that's not true. And that's never going to be the fact for the reasons that Dr. Closey shared. You always need that human element. And even if a student is going through a program that's kind of self-pacing them through and giving them really great content with really awesome videos, you still need that per human for the teacher to go over, the student, I should say, to go over and say, hey, Mr. Wilson, I see the video, that's fine, but I'm still not quite sure. And that's that person, that teacher, that's going to be able to pivot and help the student or find another resource to help make those connections if the one they're looking at isn't making it work for them. So I think, like you say, Dr. Closey, we're always going to need an actual teacher. I don't think that's ever going to change.
And just for the record, I agree with both of you. I do not feel like there will be a point in time where technology will replace a quality person, educator in the classroom anytime in the near future or the distant future, for points that both of you said. And we all know as educators, because we all were classroom teachers, that in your classroom, there's just a wide range of skills and abilities. Right? Technology does a great job in helping us to differentiate instruction and reach students at different levels and keep them all engaged, but they can't teach them all and do that without us exactly. As part of that equation to humanify the whole experience and provide the why and make the connections, because our students as well, whether they're teachers and adults or K-12 kids, they need that connection. They need that why, that piece, that social emotional connection to teaching.
So on the flip side, the plus for technology is once that's in place, now you have a whole classroom, a math classroom, a reading classroom, where everyone may be at a different level. Everyone may have missed a different loop in the previous instruction. And technology then gives us that opportunity to figure out what it is the kid missed. And then really, we talk a lot about differentiation. I'm going to say that's hard to do without technology assistance.
I agree. Just personally, not having technology, asking a teacher to take home 150 papers, whether it be a test or homework, and then to individually scrutinize every single problem to see, okay, everybody got number one right, but everyone got number two wrong. What's the difference? Technology really aids us as teachers and educators into being able to dig into the data and then really customize the learning for each of our individual students. So I agree, that is a great opportunity. So moving forward, what else would you like to see as far as technology impact on education?
Well, I'll jump in again. I think we, as wonderful as it is and all the gains that we've made, we have so many thousands, literally, of teachers that have taken our training. And we have a lot of teachers that really are becoming proficient in implementing technology in the classroom. I feel like we still have a long ways to go in terms of helping all of our teaching force know how technology can help them. So I'll bang a drum a little bit here on a specific, but we did during the pandemic adopt our learning management system, Canvas. And when we think of all the hard tasks that a teacher has to do, it's like somebody at Canvas sat around and thought, gee, what are all those hard tasks the teachers have to do and how can we make it easier? And it's so deep how it can help. And so, you know, come back to that need for continued professional development. I found that teachers, if you can show them how it can make their job easier as opposed to being another thing they have to learn, then you start to get their attention.
Yeah, I agree. I think continuing to get the message out about, you know, what we have available to use with students in all aspects is kind of our continued goal and where we need to be. Because even though, you know, we've got a lot of usage in all the things that we purchase, we're a very big district, so we still have a lot more usage that we should be seeing. So even if we see 1,000 teachers using something, we've got 5,000 who don't know it's there yet. So it's kind of closing that gap of, truthfully, for our office, what tools could we use to better communicate what we have available both in the trainings that we're doing and in just the tools that we have out there. Teachers know a lot about the ones that are really big, the big district initiative ones, but it's all the other little ones that really could help them so that they're not having to go out and search through the hundreds of applications that are out there. They know, hey, we've got some already that are vetted, that are set up, that are good for use with students that we can help you with. That's that piece, I think, that we have to continue to refine and push and help know, let people know is there.
And then an extension of that, and the reason we need to work on this is safety and data safety and helping teachers understand how to keep our kids safe, helping our kids know how to keep themselves safe.
Yes.
And, you know, every vendor that we deal with, we have a data sharing agreement with them, and they have signed on saying they're not going to misuse our data. And if teachers going out and picking application XYZ, we don't have that window of safety. So helping teachers and students and parents understand how to use this resource in a safe way is an important challenge that we have in front of us.
Yeah. And so I want to thank you both before we wrap up. We've only scratched the surface of what technology has and will do for education. That's why we're hoping that all of our listeners will like, subscribe, and share this podcast, because in future episodes, we will dig further into those things that you may not have thought about, like the data sharing agreement and teachers, you know, not just going out trying random apps or programs because, hey, it's there and it's new and it's hot, right? And so we will not only look at the good, but also the not so good behind the implementation of technology in education. Again, Dr. Colosi, it's been wonderful working with you.
Same with you, James.
Congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you.
You know, Sarah, looking forward to working many more. Well, I guess not that many more, because you'll be pretty.
I have a long time left, James.
Right. So
I started when I was 21. So
yeah. So I didn't start at 21, but I have quite a few more years, so looking forward to working with you as well. To our production team that you guys do not see behind the scenes, I want to thank them for doing a great job. I want to thank our digital learning team, who've always are there and supported both the podcast and teachers in Pinellas County Schools. This has been Tales from the Tech Side. Thank you, thank you, Thank you.